Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
So we're live, Jack.
We're live on Cooking Issues.
First of all, I like this. I like standing next to you guys when you're doing it instead of like just having you in the other room. What do you think, Stas?
Yeah, I like it.
All right, so Stas, you have questions?
Yes.
Right, so while Stas, we have some questions that were tweeted in about like you know, things at the Bass Pro Shop.
Wait, give me a proper intro though.
Yeah.
All right.
So like,
I forget what I normally say. What do I normally say? I can't even remember.
Hello.
Really?
Hello, this is Dave Arnold.
I'm so used to like, okay, I got it. Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the Bass Pro Shop in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Joined as usual in the parking lot with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing, Stas?
Good.
How you been doing today?
Good.
Do anything? What'd you do? What'd you do? Anything fun? What'd you do?
Yes, we made pork chops.
And standing next to me, which I appreciate for the first time ever, in the engineering section of the parking lot.
That's right.
We got Jack Inslee, Jackie Molecules. How you doing?
I'm great.
Nice. All right, so Nastasia and I, Jack didn't get to go in yet, but Nastasia and I just got a sneak peek of the Bass Pro Shop before they opened. So it's like a rare time to see the Bass Pro Shops, but it's completely empty. Now, they didn't really want us like milling about on the inside, so we only really saw the kind of cooking area of the section. But to give you an idea of what a Bass Pro Shop is, for those of you who don't know about a Bass Pro, which, by the way, we're not affiliated with a Bass Pro Shop in any way, shape, form.
Nope.
In any way. So it's like kind of like it's kind of like Disneyland mixed with an outdoor shop. Would you say it's accurate?
Yes.
All right. So, for instance, they have a bowling alley where all the bowling balls, like some of them are like bass, like fishing themes, but they also have great white shark, and the ball returns are like sharks and octopi.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And like the overheads have like that kind of like 50s, like enchantment under the sea prom night action going on, but with like some sort of like weird like animatronic fishing reef overhead. They have a restaurant there you can hang out and like
they
you know they
a
have
a overflow
whole,
traffic
they have
tonight.
A whole bar and then we're gonna go bowl a game later on after we're done with the show but we're here really to talk about the fact Bass Pro Shops has a very large selection of cooking gear in it, which is really kind of how this is happening, why we're here, and it's a very interesting intersection, one that I know I'm interested in, and it's like half kind of hunter-fisher, like, preservation stuff, so a lot of dehydration and a lot of, like, sausage grinding. Like, you can get a pretty big sausage grinder here. But then also just a lot of outdoor cooking in general.
Tell them what you want.
Like, which part of what I want?
The one thing that you would really like to buy from here.
But it has nothing to do with cooking.
Yes, it does.
You're talking about the pontoon
no!
boat?
No!
Oh.
The thing you saw today.
Oh, the giant skillet?
Yes.
I saw the picture of that. That's a big skillet.
That's a big old skillet. Now, here's the weird thing. Apparently, that's for, like, camping guides to do it. Use it, but it's Teflon. So, like, it was Teflon-coated. Who the heck is going to put a Teflon-coated pan on an outdoor fire? Because if you overheat the Teflon, done-ski. You know what I mean?
That's a good point.
I would not. Would you?
No.
But it was Teflon, wasn't it?
It was.
Needs some improvement. Needs to go old school, in fact. Needs to go back in time to an era where they just would season the hell out of their pans before they use them. Now, they do have a very large cast iron section, which I appreciate. And I was talking to one of their product salespeople, and I was trying to get a read off of the guy, kind of what is selling and what's not. Apparently, and this is good news for us in general, things like old style cooking techniques, like Dutch oven cooking with the not like what we're used to, but the ones where you actually have the lip where you put coals on top of it and cook outdoor, like outdoor camp cooking in a cast iron Dutch oven. He says that's really coming back, making a resurgence, and they're going to teach classes and whatnot here
later on
that outdoor kind of cooking. But what I want more to Nastasia's point is, I've kind of had my eye for a while on this thing called a cowboy grill. You seen this, Jack?
No, I haven't.
Stas, why don't you?
No, you explain.
So it's kind of like a combination fire pit slash outdoor grill.
Oh, say that again. Can you say that on radio?
So we're on the radio show. What brings you to Bass Pro tonight, ma'am?
Well, I'm a Bridgeport kid, birthed in Bridgeport Hospital, Bridgeport Hospital ICU Medicine. I'm a nurse. I opened a home care company, Abundant Care, right here in Bridgeport. Shoo. I drove up and down the street for 15 years watching people get killed, literally, with the potholes. I got nails potholes, and Mayor Finch owes me a lot of money. But I'm down here now.
So, why don't you tell people what this particular neighborhood where we were was like before this went in?
Oh, my gosh. Carpenter Steel. Carpenter Steel right along the water. Okay. Pleasure Beach. The boats, the docks, the ferry, Port Jeff Ferry, okay, forever right in this area. Then you got Seaview, which will swing you right up to Bridgeport Hospital, right? Perfect. Got to get on and off, got to get the EMTs up. And that's my story.
But do you think that having something like this here is going to bring a lot more people to the region?
Absolutely. You know the jobs that they're going to create? I hear through the grapevine that Mario Batali is going to come in to Main Street, the Chew, right next to Ralph and Richie. That's going to be cool.
Well, let me ask. Do you think that's true? Is it Batali coming here to us?
That would be good. I heard that from the restaurant guy.
Her boyfriend is the chef at Del Posto, which is one of Batali's flagship restaurants.
I haven't heard anything, but that would be great.
I think it's kind of the wraps. Ray Cinto knows about that. I'll drop it.
Did you say you heard it from the restaurant guys?
Restaurant guys.
They used to be on our radio station.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Dinner tonight for a whole bunch of restaurant guys. La Colivere, Ralph and Richie.
If the restaurant guys said it, I think it's going to happen.
God, I mean, can you imagine coming here? That would be amazing for Bridgeport.
Maybe a culinary scoop here.
That's right. I think we just got a scoop.
Maybe we have a culinary scoop here on Cooking Your Shoes from the Bass Pro Shop parking lot.
I'll tell you what, you get Ray Cinto to cook. He's the best cook I've ever known, and he can cook.
I know some pretty good cooks, though.
Having an open house on Thanksgiving. Sure, it's good for business. Abundant Care.
Right.
You might want to come. I got the Napa Reserve. I do.
Awesome.
I was in Napa in June. I was out there for my brother got sick, and my sister and I went out. She got sick. I drove a car, got lost in the valley, brought home 36 cases of Reserve.
You heard it here first. Thank you for joining Cooking Issues.
Nice.
Enjoy.
So, well, okay. Not our normal...
That's great.
Not our normal, but nice. What if that actually happened? What if we broke?
Listen, I'm a nurse, and I got to take care of these kids around here.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
What if we broke the news of a new Mario Batali restaurant?
Pretty sure we just did.
From Terry Lodge.
I don't know. Anyway, so back to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
So they have two. So the thing that I want is this thing called a cowboy grill, and what it is, it's a fire pit. But it has like a expanded metal grate over it so that you can cook on the fire pit, but you can rip the grate off. But the other cool thing is it's got like an old school swing arm, like for like a kettle that you can hang over it. And it's got a rotisserie on it that you can like hand crank. So it's like kind of like one stop shopping for cooking outside and for fire pit. My only problem is that, you know, like Miley Carpenter, my sister-in-law, Wiley Dufresne, the chef. So they have a really kind of a nice fire pit, but their fire pit is like that kind of steel that like just rusts to a certain point but never rusts any more than that.
Uh-huh.
So it stays outside all the time. This thing has got that black paint on it, so you know it's going to rust out.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's going to rust out.
Well, what is it? Yeah, that's what he said. Look, they seem like very nice people, but they were trying to convince me. You know what the top seller is right now, Jack? Here?
No.
They call it oilless fryer.
Oh, no.
Oilless turkey fryer.
What?
Stas
what?
Is making her oilless fryer face, which isn't the vegan face. It's more like the what kind of nonsense is that face.
Yeah.
It's kind of like smiling because obviously, like, if you put the words oilless and fry together, you've just lied.
Mario Batali would not use that product.
No, oilless fryer. And the guy's like, it's just like it's that you fried it. I'm like, well, then you're frying wrong. Mm-hmm. Then you're frying wrong. See, like, right? It's just not right.
Weird.
Do you know what I'm going to invent?
How does it work?
Do you know what I think it's just a roasted. It doesn't. The guy really liked it, but it can't. So can I talk about an invention that I'm going to make?
Yeah.
That I don't think we're going to sell it ever. So I don't think it's going to, I don't think I have to worry about patenting it because I'm never going to sell it. I am going to make the low volume oil. This is for turkeys and pigs and cows. Ready? The low volume oil spray fryer. Right? So it's like a washing machine, but instead of spraying detergent and hot water, it's going to spray freaking hot oil. So you can have a small amount of oil, right, with like an intense little heater and fry anything that you can fit into a dishwasher.
By By spraying it.
Well, it's just going to be like, you know how like, so the way that I finish something large when I don't have a deep fryer is I heat a thing of oil and then I'll ladle hot fat over it. So that's how like, you know, if I have to do turkey like at my in-law's house or at my mom's house, I'll go outside, I'll superheat the oil, put the oil on a grill to keep it at the right temperature, which is unsafe, please, I don't want to hear it. And then, like, I'll ladle the hot fat over the stuff to crisp up the skin. The same way that, like, in a restaurant when you're cooking, and this is the secret that I don't know why home cooks haven't figured this out yet, but you have the hot pan with the fat in it. You tip the pan back with a spoon, and you baste the hot fat over the thing to get the other side warm and nice, right? That's how you do it, which you never see people do that at home. You ever see people do that at home, Stas? But every single restaurant cook knows how to do that. Why doesn't everyone know how to do that? It's just so simple.
Yeah.
I think it's because people don't put enough fat in the pan when they're doing stuff anyway, so they don't have anything to like baste over the top. But anyway, you know, if you're the one person who listens to this show that didn't already know that, congrats. Like, you're now part of the club. Yeah. But the point is, imagine if you did that in a in something the size of a dishwasher, and it was just like spraying hot oil around. The real question is the safety interlocks, because imagine if you opened up the dishwasher style thing when the oil was still spraying. Like,
That's not good.
It's got a lock. It's got a lock and it's got a take. So if you ever use a combi oven, Jack, those things, like, usually you have to pop it once, it turns off, then you pop it again to open it.
Right.
So that you're not like, otherwise you could like just open it and the steam is like whoosh, right in your face.
Bad.
Which is bad. Considered bad. I'm sure it happened to the first few people, especially because like the Rational, which is like the first big combi oven that a lot of people got in the United States, it's like German. And so I bet they were like, the instructions say not to do this, so why would you ever open it when it's on? You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure the early German ones, you could just like scald your face off because everyone who owned it just followed the instructions.
Right.
Where as soon as it comes to, you know, America, we're like, you know, I don't read any concern instructions. And then they opened it, and you know, some dude scalded their face off and looked like a peeled grape.
Yes.
And then they, you know, they had to like, you know, put all these safety interlocks on. Anyways,
hey, I have to jump in here and say that I'm thrilled. We're getting tweets that people are listening live. This
really?
Is actually working.
So people are actually listening to us live in the back. Okay, so
his name is Amuz Douche.
Oh, I love
on
that
Twitter,
guy.
Yeah, listening.
We're
live.
We're buddies. Yeah,
and he says he wants an autograph on a board like that. I don't really know what this means.
I'd take an autograph, maybe on a booze board to match the one I already have.
I don't have one
with me. But the
do you want a question?
Yeah, give me a question.
Okay, here's a Twitter question.
Okay.
At Scooter Zackheim says, "I'm making a deboned injected turkey cooked over hot stuffing this week. Temperature thoughts: 350, 375, 400 stuffing temp. Thanks."
Wait, mean for the finish? Presumably for the finish.
Presumably.
Let me see these questions. So, I'm making a deboned injected turkey cooked over hot stuffing. So if you're not going to low temp it at all, but see, usually what I'll do is I'll low temp it for a while and put it over to flash it up. But yeah, I think high is good. If the stuffing is really nice and hot, I think you could go high. Yeah, I think you go on the higher side, like in the fours, right? If you've deboned it, you could probably go in like the mid fours and like throw it over the thing and just wait for the skin to crisp up and it should be good. I think it's going to work.
Here's one that Jack just got.
Yeah, we got a chat question here. So he's got a food safety question, a weird one. He makes food for his cat, and he buys a vitamin bone meal mix that's meant to be mixed with raw chicken. He gets his raw chicken from a Bushwick grocery store.
Bushwick!
Yeah. However, so he's been chopping it into chunks and quickly frying it with the idea of killing any nasties hanging out on the outside. Is there a better way to do this that's simple and quick? He's a cat that used to literally eat garbage in Bed-Stuy, so I don't worry too much about him, but I always wonder if there's a better way to do this.
This is a good question. So there's a whole school of thought on animal foods, and there's a whole school of thought specifically on food needing to be raw that you feed the animals. And I've always wondered why, but I don't know whether it's just animals don't get foodborne viruses or not. But the other problem is did they say that they boned it out, or is it – oh, it's got bone meal mixed with raw chicken. But the chicken – if you cook a chicken bone, it's really bad because then it starts splintering. So you have to be careful of that. So what are they doing? They're frying it. No, there's no simple – I don't know of any simple way other than like a fast – like a super fast high heat. I mean, you could just throw it – like the chunks of chicken into like a 5 jillion degree oven for like – you know, 10 minutes and kill anything on the outside. But I don't know if anything it's going to be super. I mean, like, because I don't know whether your cat's going to enjoy it if you dipped it in bleach. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you could probably. Dip it in bleach, but I don't know if your cat's going to enjoy that so much. I know my dog, who's incredibly picky, would not.
No bone, yeah, no bone. Oh, no bones.
Maybe someone in the maybe someone in the chat room verse can like has some experience, because I have to say I just feed my dog like, you know, like
store bought food.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right, next question.
All right,
Joe Hanley, New York City says, Dave, can you send out the name of the squid guts fish sauce you talked about at the MoFad Labs event?
It's called Ishiri. So the fish gut sauce that we use is made exclusively from the guts and blood of squid. And it's called Ishiri. It's from Ishikawa in Japan, and it's carried by the Mutual Trading Corporation in Secaucus, New Jersey. And what you do is you just, if you call them in advance, they will send it into their store in Manhattan. But if you go to Mutual Trading Company, they can get it. And I also found out that True World Foods carries my other favorite Japanese fish sauce, Ayu. Mm-hmm. And they can get that. So True World Foods. So those are the two sources for the ones. But go get some Ishiri, because as I've said, I think on the show before, and I said live at the museum event, it is a dead ringer for the garum sociarum that was specifically made out of mackerel guts that I had Sally Granger, who, as I said, is the world expert on Roman fish sauces. It was her personal stock of two-year-old garum that she had mixed to the recipes as best she could. Dead ringer, Ishiri. So if you want to go Roman, go get yourself some Ishiri from Mutual Trading Corporation. Hello, sir. Welcome to the Bass Pro. We're on a show called Cooking Issues that deals with cooking techniques and problems.
I'm a pit barbecuer.
Oh, yeah? Oh, nice.
I'm from
All right.
Kentucky, so I've been doing it for 40 years.
You can hold my mic.
Oh, I'm talking.
if you don't want, you're live. So what brings you? Are you doing a barbecue here later?
Like? No. I just came to see the shop. It's about time they have something like this in this area.
Tell me about it.
It's amazing that people don't realize there's enough hunters and fishermen in Connecticut, and I think people would be surprised. This place is packed.
I think a lot of people don't understand what Connecticut is once you get right off the highway. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's true.
There's a lot of forest land here and everything. Lakes, there's a great up north of Danbury, you got Candlewood and everything, so some great fishing. Norwalk River goes all the way up to Danbury. Great trout fishing through there.
So are you currently doing pit barbecue in Kentucky?
I'm from Norwalk.
Here? Oh, you're Norwalk.
I live in Norwalk right now.
Oh,
I'm from Kentucky originally.
So what's
I've been pit barbecuing for more than 40 years.
What's the style in Kentucky as opposed to, let's say, like in North Carolina or something like that? So what's the style of barbecue?
Kentucky, it's more of a Western. I'm from Western Kentucky, and West Kentucky, West Tennessee, which is Memphis.
Okay.
So that's the style of barbecue you're going to find. A light rub. When you pit smoke your meat, it's usually hickory and white oak or oak, okay, and maybe some fruit trees wood. And then what we do is we burn the wood offset and then shovel the coals underneath the meat, let the grease hit the coals, and it smokes up, and it's actually a science to it.
Now, are most people – so I know that in the mid – I would say in the early to mid-90s, almost everyone who is doing professionally on the coast anyway, over in Carolina, almost everyone has switched over to gas. And there's only a few holdouts left that were splitting wood and making their own, doing their own stuff. Do you feel that it's come back, that it's gone the other way, or is it just neighborhood to neighborhood?
It's what it is area, okay? You're not going to find that gas down in Kentucky and Tennessee or Alabama or even Georgia, really. You taste the fuel on the meat if you're using gas. You actually taste it. There's a barbecue place up here in Fairfield. Okay, I won't say the name, but when you eat his meat, you can taste the fuel. You know, my pit in my backyard in Norwalk, I don't ever use gas or anything. I just use straight wood, and you never taste the fuel. You taste smoke.
Do you sell professionally or just do it for yourself?
I do it for myself, and then people ask me to do it for them. And I charge a little money for it. And I did 31 turkeys last Thanksgiving, and probably more than that this year for different people.
So you think, like, in places like Kentucky, those guys never switched over to gas?
No. They won't do it.
Nice.
It's the way they are. Deep South is like that. They won't touch the gas.
Well, you know, like in eastern North Carolina, which is where I used to spend most of my time eating barbecue back in the day, like I say, there were very few people that held on to it. Now, I know, like, that area of North Carolina really kind of moved to use technology, not just in that, but in many things, like the way their hams are produced and stuff like that.
Right.
But I was just wondering, I guess luckily that never reached over. You like Kentucky ham?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yes. I like country ham. You know,
yeah,
the
you
salty.
Like you like Newsom's.
Mm-hmm. Don't know Newsom's.
Who do you like over there?
Broadbent.
Oh, I like Broadbent. They're good. Yeah, Broadbent. What about Finchville? You like Finchville?
Finchville, and you got in Tennessee. You got and I can't think of the name of
Benton's.
I'm not sure if that's it's Smith. Not Smithfield. That's another product. I can't remember it, but it, down Tennessee is a great place for ham, country ham like that. But Broadbent, where I'm from, yep. is big.
Yeah, nice. All righty.
So,
and what's your name?
Richard Dunn.
Richard Dunn. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it.
Letting me talk to you a little bit here. And
yeah.
If you ever need some advice about smoking or pit barbecuing, I do it all. I do salmon. It was one of my favorites. People love smoked salmon. It only takes about 4 hours to do that one. Brisket shoulders takes a lot longer, you know, 12, 15, sometimes even if you get a full shoulder with the butt and the picnic together, it takes about 24 hours.
Oh, nice.
So, I take my time. It's slow and slow. Keep it between 180 and 220.
Nice.
Beautiful. Well,
so it does real well.
Enjoy the store.
Oh, I am. Yeah. Y'all take care. And
thank
great
you.
Great to
Thanks
have you around.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yep. There we go.
All right. So what's the
different,
next question
different kind
here?
Of call in, huh?
We got a call?
No, that was a different kind of call right there. So, let's see. Bagcost says no mushrooms under vac. Is this only for botulism? Okay for cook, but not for hold.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's exactly okay. Right. So, the problem with mushrooms in a bag is it's fine. Is it? Look, mushrooms are like the classic gonna give you poisoning, botulism poisoning. It's the classic because they're typically if you're gonna can mushrooms, let's say, or jar them, you're gonna do them at a relatively it's not going to be high acid. It's going to be low acid product, right? Because do you like high acid mushrooms? I like pickled mushrooms actually, like really highly
yeah,
vinegar.
I do.
But like a lot of times people can it. They want it to taste more like a mushroom. And so those things you have to can them pretty hard to make sure you're killing all the. You ready for it, Stas?
Spores.
Yeah, so you got to kill all the spores on it. And so like that's really what the problem is. And when you do a vacuum bag, you're never going to do that. So, yeah, but it's not unsafe. It's just safe to treat it like it's been preserved. If you keep it in the fridge and you eat it within a reasonable amount of time, it's fine. I will say this. I love cooking mushrooms in a bag because mushrooms are like sponges. And when you put it in a vacuum bag, you can inject the mushrooms with like a boat ton of flavor. And then when you do, like you like low temp it for a little while in the bag, you pull them out. Oh my God, I'm taking on that guy.
There
you
it
pull
is.
Them out, and you hit them with the you hit them in the pan, and they still retain some of that flavor, even though a lot of the actual juice comes off. So you can infuse mushrooms with a good bit of flavor.
He's asking if he can ISI mushroom infuse them with vinegar too.
Probably.
He's also typing with his thumbs on
vinegar,
a phone.
If you're vinegar, then
so.
you're going to be safer. You know what I mean? If it's going to be high in vinegar, but you could ISI. The problem with ISI infusion is, go on Amazon and look on the section on vacuum infusion in Liquid Intelligence because I believe that's in the look inside. And the problem with infusing in that kind of infusion is that the ECs are really good when you want to get flavor out of something. But when you want to put flavor into something, you have to worry that when you're depressurizing, you're not pulling the stuff out. So we actually would have to stick the mushrooms in a bag with the flavor, shove that into the EC with liquid around it, and then inject the pressure in. And usually I have to do it twice. So, yes, it can be done. But for the technique to really get it done right, look on the look inside in Amazon on the Liquid Intelligence. And you can see a full set of pictures to figure out how to do it. I do it for the cucumber martini. But... that's a new accent. What is that one?
I don't know.
That was kind of...
Martini.
I don't know.
Know what that is. It's someone who enjoys what they're doing. They think it's very classy. The martini.
Ready?
Ma. Yeah, sure. What do you got?
At Ryan S. Barnett says, could I use Cal Mexicana in place of lye for lye-soaked eggs?
No. So Cal is, what is used for nixtamalization. Calcium hydroxide, and you cannot get a high enough pH with that to do the lye eggs. What they use is calcium oxide, which is a much much higher strength base. You might be able to do the Harold McGee bake out of the baking soda to get a much more, where you bake out the baking soda, you turn it from bicarbonate to sodium carbonate. That might be enough, but I'm not sure. I've only ever used straight lie, but what you're looking for is a certain pH. So we published the recipe online, didn't we, at one point?
I think it's somewhere in Cooking Issues.
Somewhere on Cooking Issues backlog. So if you, I mean, it would be possible to look up the molarity we used and then look up what the pH of that molarity of lye would be and to mimic that with calcium carbonate, not bicarbonate. So I say calcium? Sodium carbonate, not or probably calcium oxide. I think, isn't it calcium oxide they use? Not calcium hydroxide. I had to look it up. I'm doing it off the top of my head. But cal is not very soluble and is never going to reach the pH of the stuff that we were doing the lye eggs in is enough to like not want to dip your hands into. Whereas I'll put my hands into a container of nixtamal anytime.
Oh, he's
and he wants
here.
To know what ratio to H2O for quail eggs.
Where for what? For what technique?
I think he was at your MOFAD thing.
I didn't use quail eggs at MOFAD.
Oh, really? Then I have no idea.
Quail eggs.
What ratio?
I got some quail eggs. I got quail eggs at home. What should I do with them?
What do you want to do with them?
I don't know.
They're like quail eggs are good.
A dozen quail eggs in my
quail
fridge.
Quail eggs are good, like raw over like soba.
That makes sense.
Or like they're fun, like hard boiled.
Hard boiled quail eggs.
Or you
could
do
cool.
It's hard. The problem with quail eggs is that if you want to do like a fun soft boil thing, they're really hard to peel. Because the membrane around the white is really tough. So what I do is I have one of those little like cigar chomping quail egg cutters.
Oh, nice.
Because I'm very fancy. As Stas likes to point out, I'm a very fancy man.
Yeah.
And so like I have it. But the trick with it is you have to take the shell off of both sides, not one. And then you take your pinky and boop.
Okay.
Boop, right through it and knock it out. I'm not sure. I didn't use quail eggs at the thing.
I don't know what he's
I got to figure out what you're talking about. I did hameen eggs.
Right.
Oh, so you could do...
Yeah, hello. Yeah.
Howdy. We're doing cooking issues.
You won't remember me, but I'm FCI graduate.
Oh, yeah?
2011.
Oh,
how you
nice.
Doing?
Beautiful. How you doing?
Well, good, yourself?
Doing well. So you have a restaurant here?
Actually, I have a catering business out here.
Yeah, it's nice.
Right down the street, actually, on the same road.
What's
oh, beautiful.
It
Festive Food Caterers.
Festive Food Caterers. So yeah. You excited about the Bass Pro Shops?
You know what? It's been a long time coming. I've lived here 33 years, and for the last 20 years, this was nothing but, you know, broken down, abandoned houses. And to have this here, it's amazing.
I mean, yeah.
I haven't seen this many cars in this neighborhood in probably about 20, 25 years. Usually when you get 4th of July, you get this many cars parked so they can see the fireworks. Other than that, it would have been just a lot, empty lot. This is exciting.
I mean, I drive past here a lot, and you said there's nothing. There's nothing.
There was nothing here. I mean, it's so exciting. You know, living here 33 years and seeing it develop from what it was to what it became to what it is now, it's amazing.
So you think it's going to help in general, like bring us, is that going to be good for business, for restaurants? Or
it definitely is. You know what I mean? They actually called me for a couple of catering events. Starbucks called me for one catering event. So you know what? Before, who was I going to cater to this empty lot? There was no one here.
Right.
So you know what? I mean, I might not get all the catering events, but at least I'm one of the ones that are getting the events because they're noticing that we're out here, and I'm loving it. I'm glad you're out here.
Oh yeah. Well, we know we were like we saw the Bass Pros going up. We love Bass Pro, so we were
That's
coming to the
awesome.
Opening.
Where were you? Are you in New York? Or are you out here?
No, New York.
That's awesome.
Yeah, coming up from New York City. So we do a radio show now called Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. It's an extension of the blog that we used to do at FCI.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. That's awesome.
So give us the name of your catering place again.
Festive Food Caterers.
Nice. Out of Bridgeport, right near the Bass Pro Shops.
Right.
So, you know, when you come to Bass Pro, and if you're going to have, like, a party or a tailgate or something, you need someone to come cater it, maybe.
Yeah, here you go. I probably have a card with me.
Nice. There you go. Thank you, Chef.
Thank you. And it's always a pleasure to see you out here.
Oh, nice.
You know, there's only a few people that I can remember before I'm going to say hi, and you're one of them.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Take care, bye-bye.
So quail eggs.
Getting lots
so
of love
you,
here.
If you want to do a hameen egg, maybe they want to do a hameen egg. A hameen egg are like where you cook I've never done a hameen quail egg. Anyway, hameen eggs, for those of you that don't know, is if you cook an egg for a long, long time, the egg whites are more alkaline than most things that we eat. And because alkalinity, accelerates Maillard reaction or like allows Maillard reactions to happen at lower temperatures, you can get brown, toasty-tasting eggs that are delicious just by pressure cooking them. So I would say for a quail egg, because you're trying to do the hameen thing, you would cook it as long as you would a chicken egg, which would mean about an hour. So I would put them in water, let them come up to temperature for, you know, to simmer so they don't get broken. Put pressure on it for about 45 minutes to an hour, and then let the pressure come down naturally. Do not push it down. Anyway.
All right.
So we got any more questions? Stas is trying to look up the questions on my phone.
Yeah, no,
but the problem is
that
my phone
in.
Is also our connection to the outside world.
But it's not doing anything.
Do we lose the connection on our computer for questions?
No, we're good.
All right, okay. So I'll just start yammering about other stuff at the Bass Pro. So they're saying that the big seller this year...
Favorite series all camping application from Joel Stoob.
All. No, I'm kidding. Well, it depends on what you're doing when you're camping, kind of how you're rolling. So... I brought flour out with me, and so I was doing, we're doing pizzas, and I really enjoyed being able to finish the top of the pizza off with the Searsol. Also, I had good luck with fish. Also, I was out on a river. I had really good luck, let's say you're have a camp and you're camping there for a couple of days, but then you want to go out and almost like kind of cook like picnic style, like on a river. You can bring like the Searsol with you. We did like grilled cheese and things like that. So that, you know, is the stuff we kind of had. We had a lot of good luck with. But when you're cooking over a campfire, it's a lot of times useful to have a directed small thing of flame that you can just hit. So it's something that comes up a lot when you're cooking over the campfire. So for instance, like I was cooking pancakes. I think I talked about this on the show once, but I was cooking pancakes and the pan was too hot over the fire. And so they were cooking too fast on the one side. So I'd use the Searsol to rapid set the top of the pancake so I could flip it without ruining it.
Right.
So, you know, stuff like that. It's good for stuff like that.
At Nothing Mark asks, what's the best wood for smoking beef?
Jeez, I don't know. There's a huge school of thought saying that as long as you're not using a wood that doesn't have a high resin content, so for instance, any resinous wood, that you're going to be basically okay. And so, you can't really tell the difference between, I don't know whether I believe this, but you can't really tell the difference between, because I've never done the test, between like a hickory wood, let's say, and a fruit wood like an apple wood. But then there are woods that definitely have their own flavor. So if you're using there's a big difference between using chips to make smoke and actually coals. I think once you're making something into a coal, then I don't think it's going to be adding a lot of flavor on its own. But the chips clearly have different aromas. I don't really know. Depends on what you like. Like, what do you like? Do you like Stas? What do you like?
I was surprised to hear that guy said fruit tree wood.
Well, fruit. No, he's burning wood down to coals and using it. He's not like using chips and smoking them. He's doing like coals that are providing smoke but also heat. So that's different. So I think it's kind of a fundamental like difference. Like if you're just using like dust or chips and smoldering them, it's a very different thing in terms of the quality of the smoke or what the smoke's imparting, as opposed to like what I would call like clear coal off of that. So for something like clear coal, like people like hickory, because hickory has a fantastically high fuel value per pound. Like it just is like a very has a very high it's a good fuel. It's also a good wood and a delicious nut.
Elliot Papineau wants to know, would you make trail mix over the fire?
You mean like, when you say trail mix, what do you mean by trail mix? Like, what do you think?
Like nuts
Are you really thinking Chex mix? Because that
I
you could.
Yeah.
Chex mix is some straight up delicious stuff.
Yeah.
Jack, what are your thoughts on Chex mix?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
You love Chex mix,
love
right?
Love Chex mix, yeah.
Well, that needs to come back. I feel like it's gone somewhere. I haven't had it in so long.
Muddy Buddy Chex mix is really good, too.
What's
Muddy Buddy is crazy.
What's Muddy Buddy?
It's like... just Chex mix with like a shit ton of chocolate on it. Right?
Yeah,
chocolate,
like
peanut butter and white that powdered sugar.
Yeah. Whoa!
So
what?
Good.
So you buy Chex mix and then you dump melted chocolate?
No. It comes like that.
No. You make it.
Wait, what?
They sell it.
They sell it. They sell it made like this.
Well,
now.
Really?
Well, Nastasia's mom takes exception.
Wait, Muddy Buddy Chex mix was like a homemade thing before it was a prepackaged thing.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so just why don't you describe the technique? Did your mom make the Chex mix?
No, my friend's mom's did.
Yeah.
You like melt chocolate into the Chex and then
Whoa.
Chex mix, you got the mix, the salt, the butter.
Into Chex.
Straight Chex, not Chex mix.
Yes.
Okay.
Just into Chex.
Because Chex mix is Chex plus stuff and salt and butter. Which
is
money
Chex
in the bank.
And I think it's chocolate and peanut butter.
Peanut butter and like powdered
what kind of
sugar.
What kind of Chex do you enjoy for this operation?
I don't care, I guess. Rice.
Wow. Rice Chex?
Yeah.
I was thinking you were gonna say rice. Now are you a believer in the cereal Crispex? Do you remember Crisp Bex?
Oh, I used to eat that.
Yeah, so it looks kind of like, imagine if Chex turned into an elongated stop sign and one half was rice and the other half was corn.
Yeah.
Crisp Bex.
I used to like it.
Yeah, it's good. I like Crisp Bex.
All right, so we should do one more question and then wrap up in 5 minutes.
All right.
Give me some more questions then.
At Rem is buzzin'. If you quick agar clarify juice and you massage the sack too hard, any way of rescuing juice with agar in?
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that they. So what we're talking about here is with quick agar clarification. You put it through like a filter, like a linen napkin or like a very fine grain. I hate the words coming out of my mouth, cheesecloth, because I know that someone's going to go buy that big old rancid stuff that they sell.
Yeah.
It's useless. I don't even think that stuff's holes are small enough to keep freaking flies out. I think that it's a fundamentally useless, nonsense piece of crap.
Yikes.
I don't know why they sell it. I don't know what it's good for. I think it's good just for making me angry and for nothing else. How many people's food in the world over the years have been ruined by buying that crap that they think is cheesecloth but is not?
Can't say.
I don't know. It's not even good for gauze because it's not sterilized. It's useless. It's without use. It makes me angry. I don't know if you can tell that.
It's good for crafting.
Like for what?
Ghosts.
Like mummy?
Yeah.
Like mummies? Okay. All right. Rehabilitated. But it should say fake mummy fabric on it. And nothing else. So, anyways, if you have massaged, so what you do is you make an agar gel, 0.2%, 2 grams per liter, not 20. I've had people do that a million times. You break it up into a curd. You put it into what we call the sack, and then you get the clear juice out. But what you have to do with your hands is hear that? Can you hear that?
No, not on this mic.
Yeah. I'm massaging the sack, and so what it is you have to gently. Ever so gently and gingerly hold the sack and massage the sack to clear the pores such that the clear liquid can drip out. But if you squeeze the sack, you squeeze it, what's going to happen is you're going to extrude the agar through the sack. And then not only do you have a damaged sack, which nobody enjoys, but you have cloudy juice, which also nobody enjoys. Now the question that we have here is, can you somehow refilter the agar out of the cloudy sack? And I gotta say, I don't know. Like, you could try putting it through a straight coffee filter at that point, but I have a feeling that you might be in trouble. What you can do is just let it settle for a couple of hours and maybe rack the stuff off the top. But you might be, as my good friends say, SOL.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I have a...
Or you can wait a couple of months and buy one of our centrifuges, then it will be clear.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at Mr. Chris Wright says, do you know anyone who might be interested in a free centrifuge? The unit has been displaying a lid error and needs some work.
What kind of centrifuge is it?
No explanation. But if anybody wants to know, just tweet him at Mr. Chris Wright. That's WRIGHT.
Mr. like MR?
Like MR, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, look, Chris, don't give up on your centrifuge.
Yeah.
Like, let me know what were you singing? What song were you?
With the Starsky and Hutch.
Oh, how does it go?
I don't know.
Is Never Give Up part of the lyrics?
Don't give up.
Don't give up?
Yeah.
See, because I was rickrolling myself in my head when I was saying never going to give you up, because that's what I said.
Rickrolling yourself in your head.
Yeah, so the video is playing in my head right now.
Right.
As opposed to normally what's playing in my head is the elves jumping into the wood chippers.
And it just got interrupted with the rickroll.
Yeah, so I think I'm tuning into my own head and seeing the elves jumping into the wood chipper over and over again. And instead, I tune into my head and Rick Astley is there, which is worst. Although, you know who likes Rick Astley? Booker. My son Booker.
Really?
Because his girlfriend who is a girl who maybe someday will be his girlfriend, likes Rick Astley for some like unknown reason.
Strange.
I mean, his voice is not bad. Rick Astley's voice is not bad.
No.
Anyway, so back, but I got to finish this before we go. Do we have any more questions?
No. We should go in and interview some people, which we could.
All right. Hold on. Before we sign off live, though, so they have this thing called an oilless fryer.
Okay.
We already talked about this a little bit, but I'm going to go investigate. Should we buy one of these things?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It's not expensive. It's on sale.
Now would be the time, right?
Now would be the time.
What, and they have Patrick at Heritage? By the way, there's still time.
Let's get
to order a Heritage turkey.
Yeah.
There is still time.
From Heritage Meats, And I've cooked them many times. They're good. I mean, like...
We should just get, like, a butter ball.
Oh, another thing for Bass Pro Shops, before you mention... Yeah, do it with a crap. But yeah. I'm not saying that... No offense to the Butterball Corporation.
No, no offense.
Another thing I'll say is they do carry outdoor deep fryers here, made by a company that I've heard is very good called Cajun... Cajun something. Oh, my God. It's out of my head. But it is, in fact, a semi-professional deep fryer with a cold zone. And it's meant to hook up to a propane tank, and it's meant to live outside. So anyone who's interested in the idea of having a fryer outdoors, as I now have had for several months and can endorse now as a good idea, they sell them here, and they have a pop-down lid on them that covers them up so that the oil gets covered up. So give it a try.
Come on down to Bridgeport.
And I hear it's a good company. Come down, Bass Pro Shops, and we'll catch you later on Cooking Issues. Woo!
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.